Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. You know, there is so much breaking news about the Russia investigation today that we're going to talk about it in two separate segments on the show this morning, one right now, and then later with lawyer and investigative journalist Seth Abramson, who has a new book called Proof of Collusion. We'll see how what's come out in the last 24 hours dovetails with his 400 pages of connecting the dots. Our first guest is Jonathan Lemire, NBC News contributor and White House correspondent for the Associated Press. Both his news organizations have new reporting. In a highly unusual disclosure, Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani told the AP that Paul Manafort's lawyers have been briefing Donald Trump's lawyers on what Manafort told investigators during his plea agreement with special counsel Robert Mueller. I'm going to say that again, if that's new or confusing to you. Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani told the Associated Press that Paul Manafort's lawyers have been briefing Donald Trump's lawyers on what Manafort told investigators during his plea agreement with special counsel Robert Mueller. Now, that's highly unusual, and experts say ethically questionable and possibly even illegal, because Manafort had become a witness, cooperating with Mueller, answering questions, presumably, about Trump. So was he, in effect, a double agent? Giuliani admits to the AP, quote, "They share with me the things that pertain to our part of the case," unquote, meaning Trump's part of the case. And this admission comes just one day after Mueller ended the agreement with Manafort, because Mueller says Manafort repeatedly lied during those interviews. So if he was lying to Mueller and telling Trump's team what he learned from Mueller about Trump, what was Paul Manafort up to? Meanwhile, NBC News was given court documents by another Trump ally whose plea negotiations with Mueller failed this week, conspiracy theorist Jerome Corsi of birther theory fame, who told Trump associate Roger Stone in advance in 2016 that John Podesta's emails were going to be released by WikiLeaks in October to damage the Clinton campaign. And sure enough, they were in fact released in October. Corsi himself gave NBC News the Mueller court papers on this. So incredibly, we seem to have Trump lawyer Giuliani and Trump ally Jerome Corsi both releasing information publicly on the record that seems to add more weight to any theory of collusion. But wait, there's more. There's also the bombshell story from The Guardian that quotes unnamed sources saying Manafort met with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in March of 2016, just as Manafort was coming on as Trump's campaign chairman. It was WikiLeaks that a few months later released those Podesta emails. Wow. And with that as a long wind-up, now we welcome Associated Press White House correspondent and NBC and MSNBC news analyst Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for giving us some time, Jonathan, on a day when you're breaking some of this news. Welcome back to WNYC.
Happy to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with Giuliani telling the Associated Press that Manafort's lawyers were sharing information with Trump's lawyers while Manafort was officially cooperating with Mueller. Did you yourself do that interview with Giuliani?
I did. I spoke to the former mayor yesterday, late afternoon, and there's a lot to unpack here. He actually had mentioned some months before in passing that the Manafort's team and the White House had entered into this joint defense agreement. And at the time, as Giuliani has proven to be perhaps not the most reliable narrator, there were some skepticism that had happened, and there's little evidence to, he did not provide much evidence to back it up. Since then, of course, we have learned, as Giuliani spoke again yesterday, that has indeed been the case. And we know that Manafort's attorneys, even after the former campaign chairman decided to become a cooperating witness with the special counsel probe, was still sharing information with the president, his legal team. Now, Giuliani spoke to me last night. You just read the quote saying that they share with me the things that pertain to our part of the case. And then he also discussed how you know, that he stressed that the conviction for Manafort is dates back to financial crime and tax fraud that has nothing to do with his time working for Donald Trump. So that is why Manafort, of course, has. Yeah, that's Paul Robert Mueller is, of course, asking him about all sorts of issues that pertain to his time as Trump's campaign chairman, which he was for a number of months in 2016. The convictions were not. So that's an important point to stress. And Giuliani, believe me, stresses that to me all the time, that this is not why, you know, this has nothing to do with Trump, why he's going to prison.
Go ahead, you do it. But
no, I was going to say, you go ahead. I mean, there's a lot of buts to be added.
Go ahead. Yeah, you reported the story, so you go where you were going to go.
So, you know, this was, of course, he suggested that the president, of course, has also been very displeased with how Manafort has been treated. Now, let's contrast this with how he's been talking about Michael Cohen. Cohen and Manafort both entered guilty pleas the same day over the summer. And the president has blasted Cohen in every turn, suggested that he was a rat and a traitor, dismissed his ability, you know, sort of downplayed his longtime standing with the Trump organization. Manafort, he's actually spoken pretty highly of, because Manafort for a long time was not cooperating. And here, of course, this revelation that he was still talking and helping out the Trump legal team comes just as Mueller accused him again of lying to investigators and took away the deal.
How specific did Giuliani get to you about the kinds of things that were shared with Trump about Trump that he discussed with Robert Mueller?
He didn't want to get into too many details. He just suggested that it was things that he would pertain to the Trump part of the case, which was the collusion angle of it in particular. Nothing about obstruction of justice. Of course, Manafort was out of Trump's orbit by the time Trump took office, and those questions began to be raised.
So to some legal ethicists and legal analysts I've been seeing in the media, it is somewhere between unethical and illegal for Manafort's lawyers to be doing that while in a cooperation agreement with Mueller, presumably, you know, to be interviewed, that is presumably while Manafort was being interviewed about Trump. But to be clear, Giuliani, I think, told you that that was okay. What's his version, and how do you understand the ethical issues that this cooperation raises?
Yes, certainly Giuliani told me, of course, he defended the arrangement and said it was appropriate and that the White House legal team did have a right to this insight. But you're right. Legal experts are dubious, to say the least, if not downright illegal. And I've certainly heard some people suggest, legal experts who know more about this than I do, that this actually could add to a case of obstruction, that the president was here almost like not the technical term of tampering with a witness, but too involved with the case. And this is an inappropriate relationship that could actually add to Mueller's case. At the very least, I think it is safe to call it highly unusual.
Manafort and Trump had that shared defense agreement. Technically, that ended when Manafort became a cooperating witness, but he continued to share that with Team Trump. Now, how bad could this be? Well, we just had a caller who couldn't hang on to go on the air, but said she's an attorney and says these discussions between Giuliani and Manafort's team happened before the president submitted his answers to Mueller's collusion questions by email just the other day. So Trump answered those questions knowing a lot of what Mueller might have known, provided by Manafort, and our caller's theory is this could be obstruction of justice.
That's right. I mean, that is, as I just said, that is one of the things that is people think it could consider. This could add to Mueller's case. And it is interesting that, you know, that this arrangement was allowed to happen. I mean, certainly Robert Mueller was not pleased, and then there's reporting from the AP and the Times that this is a part of why Manafort's deal vanished, but he was not issued a gag order like, say, Rick Gates was. There was this a tacit agreement, at least for a time, you know, to have this joint defense agreement, you know, prior to Manafort becoming a cooperating witness.
And meanwhile, Mueller just fired Manafort from their cooperation agreement and charged Manafort with repeatedly lying during it. Did Mueller's office say lying about what?
Mueller's office doesn't say anything about anything. No. The short answer is we do not have that information yet. We expect to learn it when the Manafort sentencing hearing comes, I believe, in the next couple of weeks. But until then, no. Mueller's team has not said and disclosed what Manafort lied about.
And I want to linger on what you just said for a minute, because I don't know that this is getting much attention, but it could turn out to be potentially a very important piece of this puzzle, the sentencing hearing for Manafort, coming up in a few weeks. Mueller's office says they will file court papers at that time. I guess that, or we know that's what happens when there's a sentencing hearing, meaning it will be detailed publicly in writing what Manafort lied about, we think. That could mean Mueller will soon be disclosing in a public filing things that Manafort allegedly lied about pertaining to collusion, including if there is anything about Trump or Trump Jr. or Jared Kushner or others that Manafort and the Russians were in contact with. So my question is, how revealing do you think that Mueller filing around the sentence hearing could be in the next few weeks?
Much has been made about how Robert Mueller doesn't speak, that the White House and Rudy Giuliani in particular are setting the public terms of this entire investigation, and that Mueller just, he and his team, their head are down, they don't comment publicly. It's a cliche that a spokesman for Robert Mueller declined to comment, and it appears in every story ever written about this investigation. He speaks through these indictments. He speaks through these sentencing hearings and the documents that he files. So I do believe that we will learn a lot when that happens. And I will add, Giuliani seems to be trying to get ahead of that. He said to me last night, he accused the special counsel's team of inappropriate behavior, that Manafort has been confined to solitary in prison for most of the day, every day during this period where he is locked up before he is sentenced. They're suggesting that this is an effort from the special counsel to put pressure on Manafort to reveal things about Trump that Giuliani says won't be true, that they are sort of inappropriately pressuring him to make up something and in exchange for a reduced sentence or to be put out of solitary confinement. He suggests the same thing is happening with Jerome Corsi, as you mentioned, the InfoWars editor, who has also been ensnared into this, who has also suggested that Mueller has been pressuring him to say things that aren't true. So what you're seeing here is Giuliani and the Trump allies trying to lay the groundwork that whatever comes out in these sentencing hearings, whatever we do find out from Manafort, of course, he won't be true because they're claiming that Mueller has pressured them into lying.
Why would Manafort have been put in solitary confinement?
There are a number of reasons for it. One would be he is a high-profile individual, and I think he is someone who also has perhaps enemies on both sides of the Atlantic. He is someone who has done a lot of work for a lot of shady characters here in the United States, but also around the world, including in Ukraine and Russia, and an argument can be made he's being put there for his own protection.
So his own protection, that's different than being put there as a form of torture, which is what Giuliani is really alleging, or as a form of undeserved punishment.
And that he has certainly not provided any sort of evidence that that is what Manafort is doing. This is simply what his assertion is. And as we know, Giuliani has, in his role as more of a public relations figure for Trump than an actual courtroom lawyer, that is what he has taken to doing, is to sort of make these assertions in the public sphere without always backing them up with any evidence.
Just one more thing about this part of the story before we move on to some of the other breaking parts. Is another reason that this sentencing document will be an important filing, that it gets around any interest that the new Attorney General, Matt Whitaker, might have in muzzling the special counsel?
Right. It's going to come out regardless. And that is another key. You've raised a key part of this, is that Matt Whitaker, of course, a known critic of the Mueller probe, who is still the acting Attorney General, and Trump does not seem to be in any hurry to name a permanent person to that position, despite even other Republicans saying he should, raising questions about Whitaker's qualifications for the job. There are certainly ways that Whitaker could curtail or even end the Mueller probe. We know this is going to end, whenever it does, with a report that will be issued from Mueller to the Department of Justice that could then be turned over to Congress. If Whitaker ends things, maybe that report doesn't see the light of day. That's one, at least a scenario here. But these things that are happening in court, in federal court, these documents, with their whatever revelations they hold, will be made public.
My guest is AP White House correspondent Jonathan Lemire, also an NBC News analyst, and we can take phone calls for him on any of these stories that are breaking, at least three of them in the last day pertaining to the Russia investigation, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And you can also tweet at Brian Lehrer. And that brings us to the other public disclosure that another Trump ally made to your other news organization, NBC, about the other plea agreement talks that collapsed this week. You mentioned it with conspiracy theorist and Roger Stone associate Jerome Corsi. Corsi then released a court document from Mueller's office that proposed what Corsi would have pleaded guilty to. And again, as people's eyes glaze over at this level of detail, what's the news in that document?
This is Corsi's relationship with Roger Stone has been the sort of nexus as to why he's involved in this investigation. That the short version is that Corsi had sent emails to Stone, and this is according to draft court papers that NBC News obtained, suggesting that anticipating email dumps from WikiLeaks, from Julian Assange, that would be damaging to Hillary Clinton. And this, of course, pertains to the idea WikiLeaks, as we all know, released thousands of emails from John Podesta and other Hillary figures in the stretch run of the campaign. In fact, the first ones appeared the very day that the damaging Access Hollywood tape appeared, which has always raised eyebrows, that in effort to hurt Clinton and help Trump. And if there is a suggestion that Corsi or Stone at this point was not an official member of the Trump campaign, but certainly has had longstanding ties to Donald Trump, and they still spoke somewhat regularly. If they had some prior knowledge that these emails were coming, WikiLeaks, of course, sometimes does the bidding for Russian hackers and the GRU, that would point to the idea that there was a knowledge of collusion before the election, which is something, of course, the Trump campaign has steadfastly denied. And to bring it back to Manafort, this comes, of course, the same day as a report in The Guardian that suggests that Paul Manafort had met with Julian Assange a number of times at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where Assange has been holed up for some time now, including, according to this report, a short time before Manafort joined the Trump campaign in the spring of 2016.
So Corsi himself wrote emails to Roger Stone saying WikiLeaks had Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta's emails, and WikiLeaks was going to release some of them in October to hurt the Clinton campaign. That's exactly what actually turned out to happen. But to be clear, Corsi now denies that he actually knew what he said he knew, right?
Right. Corsi suggests that he just put two and two together and that it was sort of a lucky guess. So I guess it depends if whether or not you believe in coincidences, whether you believe him in this case. Now, Stone is someone who, this is not a secret here, many people in Washington expect could face charges of his own from the special counsel at some point. He himself has publicly said that he expects to be indicted in the coming weeks. That has not happened yet. And Stone's ties to Trump go back for years, well before his official presidential campaign.
And this is important because Trump and Roger Stone are trying to argue that they did not know in advance that WikiLeaks had stolen, or really Russia had stolen and given to WikiLeaks to distribute, John Podesta's emails. But this is the essence of collusion. Did they work with Russia and WikiLeaks to damage the Clinton campaign? Corsi's emails indicate that he and Roger Stone did know in advance. That's a big step closer to Trump campaign collusion. And we'll see if the final pieces of final dots get connected there. And all right, you mentioned the other big piece in the last day, very related, The Guardian newspaper story, that according to their sources, Manafort met with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in March of 2016, just as Manafort was signing on to be Trump's campaign chairman, and just a few months before WikiLeaks released those stolen emails in the summer. Have your news organizations, the AP and NBC News, been able to confirm that Guardian story, which only cites unnamed sources?
They have not, and I'm glad you raised that question, Brian. No other outlet has to this point. So certainly The Guardian is certainly a reputable place. They're standing by their reporting. This very well may turn out to be correct, but other outlets have not yet confirmed it. It should be noted that Paul Manafort has vociferously denied that it happened. WikiLeaks has denied that it happened. Reading tea leaves, Manafort's denials tend to be sometimes, shall we say, non-denial denials. This one was very strong and explicit, saying it never happened. So certainly there have been some questions raised about this story. Every outlet under the sun is doing their own thing to confirm it. And one would assume that embassy, with containing a person of interest in Julian Assange for a number of years, is under careful watch. First of all, London is a city with an extraordinary amount of surveillance cameras where it's hard to walk down the street without appearing on some sort of camera or another. But also, of course, intelligence agencies both in the UK would keep their eyes on that building because Assange is inside. So if Manafort was indeed there, if he was a repeat visitor, one would assume video or an image of that of him entering the embassy would appear at some point.
Right. And the Guardian story does say that Assange, as you say, met at least three times. I'm sorry, that Manafort met with Assange at least three times since Assange began living in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, once in 2013, once in 2015, and then that time in 2016 as Manafort was becoming campaign chairman. And as a piece of documentary evidence, though they don't show it, they just say they have it, The Guardian says it has seen an internal document written by Ecuador's intelligence agency that lists Manafort as having been a guest. So if the Guardian report is true, I guess that will be a piece of evidence that turns out to back it up. We have a call coming in about the Guardian story, so let's take it. Boris in Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hello, Boris.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for having me on.
Sure.
So I just want to point out the Guardian story was really excellent. If it is to be believed, I would also suggest that Manafort was put on as the Trump campaign chairman at the end of March 2016. And the Guardian says that he went to the Ecuadorian embassy to meet with Assange also in March of 2016, which makes me wonder if the only reason that Manafort got the job as Trump campaign chairperson was because he was in these direct negotiations with Assange to release the emails.
Speculation, but it's certainly a question that deserves to be asked. Jonathan, anything on that?
I'm sure that's a question that Robert Mueller is looking into. The Trump campaign has denied that. I mean, they also say they don't believe that Manafort had any contact with Assange. They say their line all along has been that Manafort, a veteran Republican operative, was brought onto the campaign that spring in order to help run the convention. If you recall, at the time, though Trump had won the majority of states in the primaries up until that point in the campaign, he was losing delegates along the way to Ted Cruz, and there was a thought that Cruz's delegate operation might have been sharper than his, so Manafort's job was to prevent a crisis at the convention that could actually steal the nomination away from Trump. He then ran the convention and was then, for a time, campaign chairman before he was replaced by Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon later that summer. They are saying that that is why he was involved. They've always downplayed how long Trump actually knew Manafort, even to laughably so. The man did run his campaign for a few months. And let's recall also did own an apartment in Trump Tower.
And to be fair, because I never want to get ahead of the facts themselves are interesting enough. What the Guardian report does not do is connect that final dot that would show genuine collusion. Yes, Manafort met with Assange, if the report is true. Yes, Manafort was becoming Trump's campaign chairman right at that time. Yes, Manafort had Russia connections. And yes, Assange's group, WikiLeaks, released the Clinton campaign emails. But The Guardian says WikiLeaks didn't get the emails from Russia until July. That would be 4 months after Manafort and Assange would have had that meeting. So we don't know if Manafort or anyone else in Trump's orbit was in on that. Is that an accurate statement of where we are?
That is. You were right. That final dot has not been connected. And that had remains one of the great mysteries. That certainly there are a lot of tea leaves, that people, there are a lot of fragments and suggestions that people have pointed to that would seem to create this case of collusion. But at least at this point, publicly, that has never been officially established with that smoking gun. Now, what Robert Mueller knows privately, we will find out.
Matt in Paramus, you're on WNYC with AP White House correspondent Jonathan Lemire. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks very much. I had seen some stories yesterday that, and I was wondering if there's any credence to it, that Mueller, is there any indication that Mueller knew Manafort was cooperating with Trump at the time Mueller sent the questions? And is there any indication out of Mueller's office that this learning of this cooperation between Manafort and Trump it has damaged his investigation in any way, or has it played into Mueller's hands?
Great question. Jonathan?
Again, we'd be having to speculate a little bit, but yes, there was prior knowledge, at least, of the agreement for a time. What remains unclear is when exactly, if Mueller realized it was still going on after Manafort agreed to cooperate. I don't think inherently, if Manafort is no longer a cooperating witness, that's not great for any investigation. You lose a star witness, that's not ideal. But at this point, Mueller's investigation, from what we know of it, is so exhaustive that it would seem that he probably can proceed apace even without Manafort there.
If The Guardian is right that Manafort and Assange started meeting each other in 2013, why might that have been? Assange at that time was considered a far-left antagonist of the United States with the Snowden emails and all of that. And, I mean, the Snowden released all these intelligence documents, right, about the NSA collecting all our phone and internet data, all that stuff. That was Assange's big claim to fame at that time. And Manafort at that time, 2013, was a Republican operative, though he was also a paid ally of Russia. What would Manafort have wanted with Julian Assange in 2013? And any speculation?
Well, it certainly one would assume it had nothing to do with Donald Trump. But let's remember, yeah, Paul Manafort has had a lot of clients over the years, and that includes those in Russia and the Ukraine, and those who have been in times ensnared in WikiLeaks-style hacks and email dumps and such. So there may have been some other political gain he was hoping to achieve from those meetings with Assange.
And it does keep coming back to Russia, doesn't it? Manafort had all this business with Russia. As you say, Russia gave political asylum to Edward Snowden, right? Ecuador gave political asylum to Assange. Russia gave political asylum to Snowden. And then Manafort and Assange get hooked up. More dots to be connected, but more dots that are relevant to the story that that now have been advanced a little bit, if the Guardian story is accurate. Paul in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Great show, as always, Brian.
Thank you.
I haven't heard mentioned that Stone and Manafort were business partners for years.
Pointing to?
That, you know, they have a deep, deep relationship.
Right. There's no question of that. There's no question of that. In fact, Stone was one of those who recommended Manafort for the Trump job. They worked together in Washington in the 80s, I believe, and you know, have both practiced a similar style of, at times, sort of, you know, dirty politics, if you will. Whether or not Stone and Manafort colluded together to work with WikiLeaks to hurt Hillary Clinton's campaign, that remains unclear, but there's no question that they have longstanding ties.
Is there a suspicion that Manafort and Assange may have had some kind of illegal quid pro quo deal? I'm going to play a 5-second clip of Trump on the campaign trail in October 2016. This is after the WikiLeaks Podesta dump came out. Trump was campaigning and said,
WikiLeaks! I love WikiLeaks!
Well, just about nobody who was in the United States government at the time, certainly including Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State in Obama's first term, loved WikiLeaks. They considered WikiLeaks an enemy of the United States and were trying to figure out if they were criminal enemies of the United States, if they were doing anything that fell under the rubric of the Espionage Act. But at least WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, was considered an antagonist of the United States. And Trump is campaigning for president, and he says, I love WikiLeaks, just after this dump. Now The Guardian reports Manafort and Assange had this relationship. Could there have been some kind of illegal quid pro quo, like maybe promising that Trump wouldn't indict Assange for releasing the Snowden documents, which the government was considering?
So I covered the Trump campaign, and that riff about WikiLeaks was something he did nightly from October on, after those first emails emerged. Whether or not there's a quid pro quo or not is unclear. Certainly that's going to be investigated as well. It is a plausible theory as any. But this also points out to another moment of president versus presidency. Just a few weeks ago, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, denounced WikiLeaks, you know, as indeed a hostile actor. The president himself has not done that. He has not discussed WikiLeaks much since taking office, but in that run-up to November, 2016, he certainly did. And it points again to his ethos of just win at all costs, how he has defended the idea that his son, you had that Trump Tower meeting in the summer of 2016 with a Kremlin-connected lawyer because it's something that anyone would do, that Trump said, suggesting why he would, from a podium in July of 2016, make a public call for Russia to hand over, to find Hillary Clinton's missing emails. He, in his defense, suggests that that wasn't an order, that wasn't an official request, but rather speaks to just his belief that any tactic it took to win would be acceptable.
Jonathan Lemire, AP White House correspondent and NBC News contributor. Jonathan, before you go, on another topic altogether, you also report today on Trump threatening to end federal subsidies to General Motors because of GM's newly announced plant closings in the Midwest, along with about 15,000 layoffs. Does the U.S. taxpayer subsidize GM?
There are indeed federal help to certain programs, including the electric vehicles. There's a federal tax credit program that helps reduce the price as an incentive to get more of these zero-emission vehicles on the road. Now, to be fair, GM is on the cusp of reaching its subsidy limit, so there's a little less teeth to this threat than perhaps at first blush. That said, this is still a rather remarkable statement from the president. First of all, it flies in the face of long-held Republican opposition to picking winners and losers in the marketplace. But more than that, it just speaks to the president testing the limits of his presidential authority and political muscle as he's trying to cut off federal subsidies to GM, one of the nation's largest companies, and he's doing it as a rebuke GM announced this week they're closing plants, 14,000 jobs could disappear from the United States. And more than that, they are mostly centered in the Midwest, those Rust Belt states where Trump, night after night during his campaign, promised that he would keep these sort of blue-collar manufacturing jobs there. And those are the states that helped propel him to victory that year. And odds are he would need some of them again in 2020 to be reelected. So he sees viewing this as he does so often, it very much through a political lens. And if it means using the powers of the federal government to exact the punishment, he's willing to do it, or at least he's willing to threaten it.
The U.S. certainly was subsidizing GM during the Obama administration. If we remember, this was part of the bailout package at the start of the financial crisis when Obama came in after that had started early 2009. General Motors was really, really bleeding money and might have gone out of business. And the Republicans in Congress opposed a bailout for GM. Obama and the Democrats were for it. It did pass. And we remember in 2012, when Obama was campaigning for re-election, one of his stock lines was, Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. Remember that, folks? Do they still have those subsidies in any way, or whatever subsidies they get, would they be unrelated to that?
I believe they'd be unrelated, but the president certainly made reference to that bailout yesterday in his tweet. He says, I'll read it to you here, the U.S. saved General Motors, and this is the thanks we get, he rather bitterly said, about GM announcing they were going to close these plants. And it is amusing that you bring up that stock Obama campaign line. I feel like Joe Biden said that nightly during that campaign, because now very much we have the president not defending the bailout of General Motors, but instead going after Admiral McRaven, who was the architect of the raid that killed bin Laden, because he's decided that he was a Hillary Clinton supporter.
Right, there's that too. Do you know if General Motors is moving those 15,000 jobs to another country or just getting smaller?
I believe some of them are being relocated to places like China. That is, they're putting more of an emphasis in their overseas. I will say the CEO of GM, in her announcement about these the layoffs and the plant closing, suggested that the tariffs the president had imposed were not helping matters here. So I think that's part of the issue as well. It's a significant blow. Larry Kudlow took the podium in the White House yesterday, to again said, expressed disappointment in this decision, although he was quick to add that he did not believe it would lead to any sort of recession, which is, I will say, the number one fear of those surrounding the president. That as many scandals swirl, as many distractions we have on a day-to-day basis, they feel like if the economy is sound, he is on firm footing to win again. If the economy crashes, that's when he's in trouble.
And I know people wonder, after so many years in a row now of expansion, whether the market cycles themselves might bring some kind of recession in 2020, which, as you say, would be bad timing for Trump. Just one final thing on this. You mentioned the tariffs and Mary Barra, the CEO of GM, bringing them up. Is there a bigger picture context of the GM announcement that has much to do with Trump tariffs or any Trump policy? Or is this largely just GM having made bad bets in the marketplace on what kind of cars to make and having to pay the price by shrinking?
It's a little bit of both. Their argument is that, yes, that the Trump administration policies didn't help. But, yes, there's no question that they also were building, they were focusing on building cars that Americans weren't buying. That's something that the White House has said as part of their spin, but there's also some truth to it. So I think that the idea that General Motors made some bad bets in the marketplace contributed to where we are now. But it still is a remarkable moment where the White House, President of the United States, instead of trying to come to the assistance, if not with the federal subsidies, but at least, sort of with his rhetoric, suggest that we'll get General Motors back on its feet, this is an important American institution, instead goes on the attack and suggests that he will punish them further.
Associated Press White House correspondent and NBC and MSNBC news analyst Jonathan Lemire. I'm sure 90% of what we just talked about for the last 35 minutes will be dated by this afternoon because things are coming so fast right now, especially with the Russia stuff. So thank you for keeping people up to date.
Happy to do it. I'm as exhausted as anybody else. Good to talk to you soon.
And by the way, Jonathan, you're still there?
I am.
Got a word from a little birdie to say happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. I couldn't think of a better place to spend it than with you guys.
Thanks again, Jonathan.